This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
We know, basically, what happened. The question is, how much worse could it get? Evergrande, day two, from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Tuesday, today the 21st day of September. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Shares of the Chinese property company that most people had never heard of until yesterday took a little dip on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange in overnight trading. China Evergrande Group down 0.4%. The Nikkei in Tokyo down a couple of percent. Europe bounced back just fine. Wall Street came oh so close to breaking even. The lingering question, of course, is, wait, what? How did this happen? I mean, sure, it's a global economy, but is Evergrande really the next Lehman Brothers? Marketplace's Sabri Benishour is on the Too Big to Fail China desk today.
Evergrande is China's second largest property developer by sales. It's also invested in electric vehicles, media production. It has a theme park and 2,000 domestic subsidiaries. It is a big deal in China. What then is the connection to U.S. markets?
I think there is almost no real connection.
Nicholas Lardy is a senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics.
China does not have very many deep connections to the global financial system. Citibank and J.P. Morgan Chase have not lent a significant amount of money to Evergrande.
Some U.S. firms have bought Evergrande bonds. BlackRock held about 1% of its portfolio in Evergrande bond shares as of August, according to Morningstar. They might lose a lot of money, but that's not about to take down the whole global financial system. There is a more indirect way. Evergrande's problems are the world's problems, though.
Evergrande is potentially representative of a much broader set of problems across China's real estate sector.
Nick Consonary is an executive director at Eurasia Group.
That's a massive piece of China's economy. So as goes their real estate sector, will go China's growth outlook and really the outlook for emerging markets.
And in turn, global business. It's also hard to say how the Chinese government will want to handle all of this.
There is a scenario here where Beijing actively decides, you know, we're going to let Evergrande go to, you know, signal to investors there in China that the government's not always going to be a backstop.
That could backfire. Global investors don't need this Evergrande anxiety right now. Lindsay Bell is chief investment strategist at Ally Invest.
I think it was probably just the straw that broke the camel's back.
Markets were already uncomfortably high. Economic uncertainty was already building.
We already came off several months of weakening economic data. Then now supply chain concerns are ramping up. Inflation's still a question.
Add to that a little bit of concern over the health of the world's second largest economy and, well, presto, market mayhem. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
Presto, market mayhem. One more existential risk to the global economy, if I might. The Congress of the United States of America. The House is set to pass a government funding bill and this is the important part, a suspension of the debt limit until 2022 after the 2022 elections, to be sure. That bill's supposed to come up for a vote tonight. Its fate in the Senate, in the face of Republican opposition, though, is uncertain at best. To quote Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, default could trigger a spike in interest rates, a steep drop in stock prices, and other financial turmoil. Our current economic recovery would reverse into recession with billions of dollars of growth and millions of jobs lost, end of quote. So, you know that. On Wall Street on this Tuesday, as I said, flat-ish to down. Might have been higher if traders weren't waiting for Jay Powell to drop some bad news on them tomorrow. We'll have the details when we do the numbers.
All right, so this is what I was talking about with Jay Powell. There are going to be a lot of eyes on the Fed's big monthly press conference tomorrow, wrapping up one of its big policy meetings. Everybody's waiting to find out when the Fed is going to start tapering its big bond buying program. And this meeting in particular came 2 weeks after that not entirely satisfying August unemployment report and 2 weeks before the September jobs report, about which, if I might quote Chair Powell one more time right here.
Forecasters have a lot to be humble about. It's a highly uncertain business.
And that is why, more than ever, those forecasters are turning to something called high-frequency data, like restaurant reservations and hotel occupancy rates, retail foot traffic information, collected, by the way, all of that information by private companies to understand where this economy is headed. Ray Sanza, who we first introduced you to about 6 months ago, works for one of those companies. He's the vice president of data and analytics at Homebase. They make employee time tracking software for small businesses. And when I talked to him the other day, I asked him what his hourly punch card data is showing right about now.
So what we're seeing is that there's a higher level of suppression in hours worked and employees working. It looks like it's about 7% down from where it was about a month ago. That's not abnormal for the tail end of summer. Yeah. The thing that is somewhat worrying here is that Main Street is a bit suppressed from where it would have been had COVID not happened. And so seeing declines here is a bit worrying.
Can you show me through the miracle of Zoom what this looks like? Where would we be without Zoom?
Yes, there we go. All right. Do you see this screen?
Yeah, you bet. Since July 21. There we go.
All right. So this looks at, if you just index our data to July, you'll see that there's been this consistent decline. You know, we think a lot of this is due to COVID, and you can see the reference week is here.
Right. So I should tell people what we're looking at, right? It's a line chart or a graph, whatever, that goes from, looks like July 4th weekend, right? Or maybe the beginning of July.
Exactly.
And then it's a long, slow slide through July, through August. You see the big dip on Labor Day. There's a dip on the 12th of August, right? So that's what you saw. And then there's a dip on the 12th-ish of September, which is this past Sunday. All right, so I don't want to get all dorky here, right? But this reference week thing is important because that's the data that shows up in the monthly jobs report. But what you're telling me is you're seeing it in a way that the monthly jobs numbers don't manifest.
So what we see is we're able to see the slide continuously between those 2 weeks. I think when we talked last time, what we said is the ice storm in Texas that happened, and we could see that there was a big dip there. That wasn't reflected in the jobs report. And unfortunately, we have a similar thing going on right now with the hurricane in Louisiana, where I could show you a chart there that shows the impact that had on New Orleans, which frankly, like the devastation that happened over the course of a week will probably not be reflected in the jobs report.
So you see in this data, just this chart I'm looking at, the since July 2021 chart, right? There are the big drops of the 4th of July and Labor Day. But there's all kinds of other data bouncing around, right? There are some spikes and some troughs and this and that. It's noisy, I guess, is the point. And high-frequency data does have to sort of carry that caveat, right?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, there is, and certainly that happens when you try to zoom in more and more in localities. So generally things get smoothed over when you're looking on a national basis. But if you were to go to an actual city, you could see things like a local football game really like drives this in a given week. So that's both the power and the curse of this data, is that we can't explain everything. We don't try to explain everything, but we enable a lot of other smarter people than us to try to explain things.
All right. So talking about smarter people than you and me, there are a bunch of people who looked at the August jobs report, right, where we were expecting a big, big number, and it came in at 235,000. And everybody went, oh, my goodness, that's terrible. What a surprise. Were you surprised?
So we don't try to predict the jobs report. That's not what we do. But we have learned through time, and lots of people told us that there's a correlation there. And we happen to have deep insight into one of the most impacted industries right now. So we saw that in our set of employment that number went down. Mm-hmm. So we're not that surprised.
Yeah. So this is a tricky question to ask a guy whose job is data and analytics and who lives and breathes this stuff every day. But is it possible? I can hear the reply as I'm asking the question. Is it possible we have too much data?
I actually do think so. And I'll give you a great example here. one ways in which we have too much data is that people can come in and they can prove whatever hypothesis they want to prove. Right. And so actually, I had a conversation with you guys about a month and a half ago on a finding that we saw where states that kept unemployment benefits in place had better outcomes than those that ended it, which would then say, oh my goodness, throw microeconomics out of, microeconomics out, we don't know what we're doing. Well, actually, this correlation is meaningless and we're just not at the point where unemployment benefits are making a big difference. But that was not what people jumped to. So not that we have too much data, it's that we don't have enough nuance.
With great power comes great responsibility, right?
Exactly. And that's part of the reason why we don't try to predict the jobs report. We give this to people. And then when people talk to me and they say, tell me what's happening, the world is complicated and there's lots of variables. And so I can show you the output. I can't always explain the inputs.
Yeah. Ray, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care. Thanks, guy.
Housing. It gives and it takes. The good news from real estate today? New housing starts were up about 4% in August. Permits to build said houses were up 6%. Most of those gains, though, were in apartment construction. Single-family homes actually saw a decline in starts overall, but not everywhere. Because, as Marketplace's Amy Scott reports, for new homes, that location, location, location thing, it's really true.
Lennar, one of the country's biggest builders, was expecting to deliver at least 15,800 homes last quarter, but said today it came up 600 houses short, blaming, you guessed it, supply chain issues. In an earnings call, co-CEO John Jaffe rattled off a list of the biggest bottlenecks.
Engineered wood, windows, garage doors, paint, and vinyl siding.
Most buyers prefer doors and paint with their new homes. Some shortages are regional. Brick and lumber in Texas, concrete block and insulation in Florida, and workers in Texas and Minnesota. Robert Dietz, chief economist with the National Association of Home Builders, says all that makes building slower and more expensive.
If you construct a basket of residential construction material goods, those prices are up about 20% year over year.
Dietz says lumber prices are down from their peak of about $1,500 per thousand board feet to more like $400. That should help in the coming months. Location matters in the pace of building, too. Kelly Mangold is with RCLCO Real Estate Consulting.
We've seen single-family homes starts increase in both the Northeast and the South. You know, builders are still finding creative ways to keep their pipelines moving.
Especially builders of multifamily housing. Groundbreaking on buildings with at least 5 units was up more than 20% last month. And with a shortage of at least 1 million units, any new housing is much needed housing. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Coming up.
People are not meant to be alone.
Community is everything, you know. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's down 50 today, about a 10%, 33,919. The NASDAQ gained 32 points, about 0.2%, 14,746. The S&P 500 basically flat, 43.54. Uber up 11.5% today. The ride-sharing company revised its financial outlook upward for its third quarter, apparently getting more bookings than it expected. AutoZone reported strong quarterly earnings and shares of the car parts retailer grew 3.6%. Google's got a lot of money in the bank, so the $2.1 billion the company is spending on a New York City office building isn't all that much dough. But then again, the Wall Street Journal says it will be the most anybody's paid for a single office building since the pandemic started. 550 Washington Street, in case you're curious. It's going to house sales and partnership teams for them. You're listening to Marketplace.
Thank you.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Among those most concerned by climate change, other than, you know, all of humankind, are insurance companies, which are having to deal with more multi-billion dollar payouts because of floods and hurricanes and wildfires. To that end, California has put a one-year ban on insurance companies dropping homeowners who live in areas affected by some of this year's biggest fires. Marketplace's Samantha Fields has that one.
Insurance is all about risk, and in California, the risk of wildfire has been going up in recent years.
2015, 2017, 2018 were really big years. 2020 was also a tough year.
Joel Loucher is an insurance consultant in California. He says many insurers are looking at how they can reduce their risk, and so...
Insurance is a real challenge in wildfire areas as fewer and fewer insurers are making coverage available.
Between 2018 and 2019, the number of homeowners whose insurance companies refused to renew their policies grew about 30%, according to state data. California Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara says most homeowners do still have options for insurance.
But there are places in our state where you cannot get insurance companies to even call you back. And so we have to restore competition in those places.
The best way to do that, Lara says, is by getting communities and individual homeowners to take concrete steps to minimize fire risk. Andrew Plantinga, an economist at the University of California, Santa Barbara, says there are a lot of ways they can do that.
They can clear vegetation near their home. They can make sure that they've got a roof that's fire resistant. They can put in vents that prevent embers from flying inside and bringing their house down.
Insurance companies don't always take those kinds of efforts into account. But Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara says they should.
We're starting to see now a growing number of insurance companies that are giving people discounts for their mitigation.
Lara says he's working on new rules that would require insurers to give discounts if people and communities meet certain standards for reducing fire risk. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
Back when travel seemed almost normal before Delta took over, I noticed something at the hotels I stayed in. Daily housekeeping isn't anymore. So what does it mean to be a hotel housekeeper now? That is today's installment of our series, My Economy.
I'm Mary Tabunyar, and I'm working in a hotel here in Waikiki, and I live migrate here for 8 years already. From the Philippines. I've been working in a housekeeping for 3 years. Since the pandemic, I've been furloughed for 18 months and then become on call. What we have to do is like wait for the morning from 5:30 a.m. until 10 in the morning. So if they have no calls, then that's it. No work for you. I heard that some of my coworkers is going to a food bank, and they told me about how to register in the food bank. So that time I was certainly like ashamed of going in because maybe somebody will know me and see me that, hey, it's Mary going in the food bank. Yeah, but I have no income anymore. I have two kids and my mom is with me. I'm a single mom and I have nobody else to rely on. So I told myself I have to do something. I didn't look up for another job during this pandemic because I have my kids to stay home before. And my mom is in a senior citizen level already. So I'm just worried about getting that COVID and then pass it to my mom. And I have to guide my kids home for school. It's very stressful because every day you're going to wake up, okay, where can I go right now? It's like today, okay, I have to wake up early because I have to go to food bank line. But for tomorrow, I have to wake up again, okay, where can I get for like paying my bills, right? The rent, everything. I hope that the hotel will bring us back to work. So we are going to be, I'm hoping for a normal life again.
Mary Tabonyar, hoping in Waikiki, in Hawaii. Let us know, would you, what's going on in your economy? There's a place you can do that at marketplace.org. Last summer, after 3 or 4 months of offices being shut down, and just as we were all kind of realizing this pandemic was going to be a thing for a good long while, we asked Marielle Segarra to go back to the office. I mean, not actually back to the office because it was closed, but to the area around our bureau in New York, Midtown East, it's called, 47th and 3rd, give or take, to see how the businesses, all the restaurants and markets that serve the office worker lunch crowds in the before times were doing with no office worker lunch crowds. Mario went back just a couple of weeks ago for another look around.
Up until the other day, I hadn't been back to our office in more than a year. It's in one of those midtown skyscrapers with lots of floors and used to be filled with people. Now it's pretty empty. When I get to our floor, I walk past the containers of disinfecting wipes and rolls of holiday wrapping paper from 2019. It's just really weird. I just have stuff here, like, in my desk, and, oh my God, like, stuff from, it just feels like a lifetime ago now. A card that one of our interns wrote to me. These stickers, I don't even know when I got these, with little cats on them. I shake it off and head to the elevator. This is funny, they say they have self-cleaning buttons. I don't really know what that means. I walk outside and across the street to Macaron Cafe, where I used to duck out for tea, a sandwich, or a snack. When I came here last summer, there was a display in the window from Valentine's Day, a giant heart made out of macarons. Now the window is covered in plastic tarp, and the inside is gutted.
There are like pieces of plywood on the floor and like caution tape hanging from the ceiling, and it genuinely just feels like some things were lost that are never coming back.
I go down the street to the Comfort Diner, where co-owner Tarek Salomon has been trying to tough it out.
We never thought it was going to stay like 2 years, a pandemic.
Last year, he didn't think the business would make it. He had so few customers that he went to his landlord in the summer and said, I can't do this anymore.
I called him. I tell him, come take your key. I say, because I don't make money.
They made a deal. He paid 25% of the rent. Recently, his landlord came back and asked for 50. But he says sales have not gone up by that much.
I said, no, I can't pay 50, so I give him 35%. I tell him in January, we come to talk again.
Forget about making a profit. One thing that's kept him going, he wants to work, and he doesn't want to stay home. It's not all bleak. I walk by a chain restaurant and see people who've got to be office workers lined up to order lunch in their button-downs and slacks. And Paulina Liss, general manager at an Irish pub called The Perfect Pint East, tells me business has been picking up, and that feels good.
People need to be together, you know? The people are not meant to be alone. Once we're alone, we just start getting crazy.
Down the street, there's a coffee shop called Little Collins. It opened in December 2020 and serves stuff like espresso, cold brew, and sandwiches. I talked to co-owner Nick Kerno.
Each week, aside from maybe like a couple of holiday weeks, it's been picking up.
But even with that sales increase and a federal pandemic loan, they have debts to pay.
you know, rents backdated. We won't be in the green, I don't think, for a wee while yet.
That's just the reality in this neighborhood right now. Things are getting better, but they're still far from normal. It's one of those in-between times. Nobody expected to be here, and nobody knows what's on the other side. I'm Mary Elsegarra for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, a quick coda of sorts to Amy's story about housing. A report out today from the data firm CoreLogic shows that single-family home rents were up 8.5% in July, the biggest jump in 16 years. And in case you were wondering, yes, rent is part of the Consumer Price Index inflation measurement we tell you about all the time. All right, we got to go. Here is your moment of economic context. Just because the national debt is a thing right now, politically, I mean, not necessarily economically at the moment. Says the Treasury Department, the national debt as of close of business yesterday, $28,427,187,672,497.60. No idea what the 60 cents is. Siobhan Brett, Ufuk Mematolu, Janet Wynn, and Donna Tam are part of our digital and on-demand team. Star Nieves is the executive director of On Demand. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. And this is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.